Market. Okay, today is January 29th. It's the first day of the semester, Chamesh Megillos, and we are starting with the notion that the Chamesh Megillos as a unit, to contain these five as one unit of a group to teach a course, is not something Chazal were aware of. Right? Chazal lists the books of Ksuvim, right? They start with Tehillim, and they go to Mishle, and then, Mishle and then Iyov, right? Moses comes a little later, right? To Tehillim, Mishle, Iyov. Mixing something up here. They do tail and then roast. The list of the ksuvim in the Gemara, in Gemara Baba Basra, Daf Tesvov, Yudalad, Daf Amadbeis, Tesvov, Amad Aleph, lists a chronological order of the books of ksuvim. So there's a deep chronological disorder of the Chamesh Megillos. You know, Rus is very early in Tanakh. It's in the time of Sefer Shoftim. Right? Esther is the very end of Tanakh. Right? Shir HaShirim and Koheles are in the middle, and Eicha is towards the end of Tanakh also. Right? So to put the five of them together in one grouping, like our Tanakhs do, right, is a late connection. Right? In fact, to read these five liturgically in a public gathering on particular days, but let's start with Pesach, Shir HaShirim on Pesach, Rus on Shavuos, Eicha on Tisha B'Av, Koheles on Sukkos, and Esther on Purim, that's a late minhag. Only one of those five is mentioned in any medrash, and that is, of course, Esther on Purim. There's one Masech, the Meseches Megillah, talks about the reading of Megillah's Esther on Purim. Okay. So to put them all together in one grouping appears to be based on this liturgical notion that they are read publicly, right? So let's put the five of them together in one package, right? So instead of chronological order, right, which is the Gemara, the order that we have in our Tanakhs today is more of, I'll call it, a contextual or liturgical order. What do I mean by that? Is that after, this is our Tanakh today. I'm not saying every one of them, but most of the ones you buy in a Sfarim store. I have a Tanakh that has the order of Ksuvim like the Gemara. It even has the order of Nevi'im like the Gemara, which is different. But the contextual liturgical order indeed starts with Tehillim, goes to Mishle, it goes to Iyov. You see the words MS spelled backwards? Right? These are books of MS, the truth of the human condition. There's no really storyline in these books except for two chapters in the beginning of Iyov. But it's really about the human condition. What's our life about? What are we here for? Right? Okay, so after these three books, in our order, it goes to the Chamesh Megillos, in the order that we say them from Pesach. So the order will be Shir HaShirim, then Rus, Eicha, Koheles, and then Esther. Okay, so it's very easy to remember the first eight books of Ksuvim, is you got your MS backwards, then you have the Chamesh Megillos in the order in which we read them. So that order could not have been from the time of the Gemara because we weren't reading four of these five on these days until the time of the Gaonim. There's no reference anywhere that these four books are to be read publicly in a public forum. Not all shuls even do that. I grew up in a shul where they did not read Koheles on Sukkos or Rus on Shavuos. Okay? I find it much more universal now. It's a nice minhag. The shuls do it with a cloth. All right, so these five are set up this way, and we will conveniently learn them along the year the semester in the order in which the calendar goes from today, which means we're starting with Esther until Purim. We'll continue with Shirim until Pesach. We'll learn Rus until Shavuos. And then, willy-nilly, we'll see how we can fit in Koheles and Eicha in that scheme. If we don't get to it, you know, we'll see. In other words, if we finish what we want to do with Esther 2 weeks, a week before Purim, we'll supplement and we'll do those at that point. Okay, we're clear? All right, so to start with, we're going to do Esther, and I want to give you an overview or background of a few things before we go into the text, okay? So what you have here is the entire text of Esther. Just the first four chapters, Hebrew and English back to back. And then this is one of the sources that we're covering there. And this is a list of the Persian kings that have ruled that we know very well from historical background, historical records. Okay, what you're looking at the bottom of that list is it's really a wonderful piece of history for Jews. This is the permission that Cyrus gave when he wrote an exhortation to the Jews to return to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple. Okay? Okay, that exhortation is found, and if you turn over that page, you're going to see some books at the bottom of the page. This is the chiddush of this presentation, is that to fully understand the hidden message of Esther, what lies beneath the text, one must have some cursory knowledge of all those books and chapters that I put down on that page. It's a bit of an expectation, right? But I'm afraid that if you don't know what Haggai is about, and you don't know what Zechariah tried to do, and you don't know what's essentially what Yirmiyahu tries to do in those two chapters, you will miss the main message of what's going on in Megillas Esther. And along those lines, one has to now turn back over the other side. Along those lines, one has to familiarize oneself with this Persian history, which you see goes over close to 200 years, right? And one will have to figure out which one of these kings is Ahasuerus. He is one of them. Okay? Now, a word of caution. I will try to fit in, especially when we try to figure out which one of these kings is up as Ahasuerus. Some of them sound a little like Ahasuerus. I will try to fit that in as much as possible to the basic opinion of Chazal. But I caution you, even within Chazal, there is not necessarily a consensus of when our story takes place. Some will have it before we returned from the 70-year exile. Some will have it after we returned from the 70-year exile. Okay? And the final word of caution on that level is that there's a Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah that says that the entire Persian dynasty lasted all of 33 years. We'll have to figure out exactly what that means. Because you can see very clearly, and this is really very well determined by history, that the Persian dynasty lasted somewhat closer to 200 years. Right? Can you tell me what year we're in now in the Hebrew calendar?
5779.
Okay. What year are we in the Gregorian calendar?
2019.
Okay, 2019. Okay, that this equals that, right, is predicated on this Gemara that says the Persian dynasty lasted a total of 33 years. Hmm. That's a problem. Okay, so have you been taught in high school what year the first temple was destroyed?
586.
I was taught that as well. There's some schools that are using a different number now, but yes, that's really very well attested in historical records, that 586 BCE is the destruction of the first temple. And it was built, just as Yirmiyahu predicted, 70 years later. It's very well attested in Sefer Haggai, and frankly, by Cyrus's order. Okay? Okay? What I'm about to do on the board for you, I'm going to have to do it quickly. It has caused, I don't know if you read some of why you, my daughter 2 years ago, a little shout out to Mindy, wrote for the Stern Torah Journal, a collection of all the answers to the problem I'm about to show you on the board. All right? And there are 10 different answers. If you can give the definitive answer that everyone accepts, you'll be granted a doctorate. Okay? All right, so here's the problem, okay? We like to call the year we're in 5779. You have to be careful. If you write a ksuba and you get the wrong year, then a ksuba is possible. Again, with the wrong year, again, it's possible. You write the years of creation, right? Mm-hmm. So if this year is counting on a 33-year Persian dynasty, but it really lasted more like 200 years, we're not in 5779. We're in 59-something, right? So because of that, we write in all our shtaros today, we write Chameshet Alafim, Shvameot, Shvim Etesha, Leminyan, Mibriya Sa'olam, Leminyan Sha'anu Monin Kan, according to our minyan. Some ksuvos used to start counting the years from Alexander the Great's dynasty, known as Minyan Shtaros. At the beginning of the Maseches Rosh Hashanah is very intent on this, because the first Mishnah starts off Rosh Hashanah le Shtaros, Rosh Hashanah le Melachim, you know, when does the king's year pass over to a second year? Is it at the anniversary that the day he arrived, or some other judgment? So on that, the Gemara really cares very much about history, and it makes the astounding claim that the entire Persian dynasty lasted all 32 years. Right? Have you been taught how long Bayis Rishon lasted?
516 to 70.
Well, that's
Bayis Rishon.
Okay, there's a Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah, Daf Tes, that says Bayis Sheni stood for him in 10 years. I should say, sorry, Bayis Rishon stood for him in 10 years, Bayis Sheni stood for him in 20 years. Okay? Bayis Rishon stood 410 years, Bayis Sheni stood 420 years. Just do this enough so that you'll know what all these books are about. Chagai is a very short book of Tanakh, only 2 chapters. It has one singular message, which is, you better get to work building the temple. 70 years are just about up. Yirmiyahu predicted that the temple would be in a state of destruction for 70 years. There are only 2 years to go. Get to work. He's good. People listen to him. With the help of Darius, let's say Cyrus and Chagai, with the help of Darius, the people put everything together and they managed to return and build the temple. With 2 years it was built. Can you imagine that? Okay? Put together a good committee and Chagai got it all done. Right? Okay. Now, Chagai says this temple will be greater than the first one. It wasn't right away. After it was built, it says in Sefer Ezra that the people cried when they saw it, who were 90 years old or 80 years old, who remember the first one. They said, this is nothing in our eyes compared to the first one. Even Chagai himself says so. But so what does it mean this one will be greater than the second? So the Gemara in Yuma says 2 answers. The Gemara in Yuma says either because it stood longer, right? Bring a notebook next time.
Yes.
Either because it stood longer, or because by the time Herod got finished beautifying it, it was nice and much longer. Mara admits that. Okay? It was night. It stood longer, 10 years longer. Okay? Now, you told me some years before. What year was the first one rebuilt, the second one rebuilt?
516.
516. What year was it destroyed? That's BCE, right?
Yes.
What year was it destroyed?
70 CE.
Well, the correct year is 68, you'll see soon. 68 CE is when it was rebuilt. When the second one was destroyed. Okay? Got it?
Yes.
Now, bear with me while I write a chart on the board. Okay? If the year one starts off in Bereishis when Adam HaRishon is created, and the year 930 is the year he dies, just follow with Bereishis. Abraham is born, an easy year to remember, in the year 1948. Just by following what's in Bereishis. I have not basing this on any tradition. I'm just basing it on the Pesukim of the Torah. Okay? That this world is probably 13 billion years old is just the fact that each day of creation might have taken, in our time, 2 billion years. You understand? Fine. Okay? But from the time that human beings like us, who are writing and talking and communicating and connecting with only one other human being, emotionally and sexually, and that is, we don't find any such records of more than 6,000-7,000 years. We have bones that are 200,000 years old, carbon dating. But that's maybe a different type of human that evolved slowly like everything else for 2 billion years. The sixth day also took 2 billion years. This will resolve all of our problems with how old the world is, right? Let's get on to more important things. Okay? Abram is born in the year 1948. 500 years from the day he's born, when Israel left Mitzrayim. 400 plus 100 when Yitzchak was born. So, Bnei Yisrael leave Mitzrayim 2448. You agree? Okay? That's also based on simple Pesukim and Tanakh. 480 years later, it says in Sefer Melachim, the Beis HaMikdash was built. That's 2928. Got it?
Yep.
Good? That temple stood in how many years? 410. So in 33, 38, the first temple is destroyed. Still with me?
Yeah.
70 years later, it's rebuilt. That's 3408, right? That temple stood how many years?
420.
That to 3828, right? Guess what? 3828 is exactly 68. It works. Very nice. But what's the problem? These are the dates you gave me that you learned in high school. How long is this?
584 years.
584. But that we are 5779 coinciding with 2019, because if 3828 equals 68, every year keeps adding one to both, and it does coincide. That's only assuming that the second temple stands 420 years. Right? Where do you think they lost those 164 years, right? It's here. If the rabbis say the Persian dynasty lasted 33 years, I know where those 164 years disappeared. You see it? Okay?
Yeah.
So what would happen? I have a theory. I have a theory based on Sefer Shoftim. If you want to hear it at the end of the semester, remind yourself. I'll tell you what they did. Okay? But there are a bunch of years missing here, however you slice it. Right? In case you were aware of this cheshbon, I just want you to know it now. All right? It's okay. Right? The rabbis who say that Alexander the Great conquered Persia very shortly after Cyrus conquered Babylonia, right, is a sort of a diminution of history. It's compressing history. That's okay. This Gemara does not probably mean to be historical. It means to be fundamentally it's a moral message of what this means that the person's lasted in such a short time. I'm not going to get into all this, right? To be sure, this is why we write in our contracts l'minyan sha'anamon kan. Finish. Doesn't matter. As long as we agree that it's 5779, doesn't matter. It may make a difference if we feel that Mashiach must come before the year 6000, that we're a lot closer to that than we thought, all right? But I'll leave that for others. Okay? You with me? All right, so what we want to do is take the evidence of different Mamre Chazal and different statements in Tanakh and try to figure out from our sources, right? The historian doesn't really care about who Ahasuerus is. But we do, because it's a story we care about. It's, we believe it's an historical account. Right? And if we can work out from Sukkim in Megillat Esther, there are whole books written on this topic now. I care more about the text than figuring out. But along the lines of the text, I do want to see who he is. We're going to see two different opinions emerge. Okay? So this is to get to the hidden message of Megillat Esther. What do I mean by that? There is a Gemara in Maseches Chulin, of all places, not Maseches Megillah. You're probably familiar with what I'm about to tell you, and you may know the answer. But there's a Gemara in Maseches Chulin that says the following. It says, Esther mina Torah minayin. Where is Esther hinted in the Torah? Are you perplexed by such a question? Because the Gemara does ask, Haman min haTorah minayin, Mordechai min haTorah minayin. Where do we see hints of these characters of Megillat Esther in the Torah? So you might ask, does the Torah say David min haTorah? Does the Gemara ask David min haTorah minayin? Shmuel min haTorah minayin? Yirmiyahu min haTorah minayin? Who would think of asking such questions? Why would the Torah give us hints to these people that weren't alive yet for hundreds of years? Are you hinted at in the Torah? Like Ramban says, everything is hinted somewhere in Parshas Hazinu, but you know what I mean. So the answer to this question I would suggest to you is because there is a Gemara Megillah Daf Zayin, that expresses to us that Esther, along with four other books, by the way, I'm not going to get into that right now. We will, because some of those books are in Chamesh Megillos. Right, that Esther had a difficult time getting canonized in Tanakh. The rabbis did not consider it holy. All the way until the 3rd century, there were those who felt that Esther does not belong in the canon of Tanakh. You know what I mean by that, right? Yes. What difference does it make? It's a good story. Let's learn it. Can you derive things from it? Will Gemara quote something in Esther as like an authoritative limud? You can study Shakespeare and learn good ideas of life. Right? Mm-hmm. A good example of this would be to compare Mishle in Tanakh with another book of Mishle. You're familiar with your Mishle Ben Sira? Have you ever heard of that? It's called the Apocrypha.
Yeah, Ibn Ezra?
No, Ben Sira. No, Mishle Ben Sira. It's ancient. The Dead Sea Scrolls authors knew of it. It was a list of ancient proverbs. It's just that it was not considered part of Tanakh. To the untrained eye, the two books will look the same. But when the Gemara in Maseches Pesachim says, what color of wine should we use for the Seder? Right? And it says, because in Mishle it says, don't be seduced by the redness of wine. It may seduce you to want to drink it, and then you'll be lost. Right? So, you wouldn't derive, that's what the Gemara says, that red wine is always better than white wine for the Seder, or for Kiddush. I only can do that for Mishle because I think Mishle is not just good ideas and good advice about leading the good life, you know what I'm saying? Mishle is canonical, it's holy, it's part of the Bible. You get a difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't learn such a thing from Pesukim and Mishle Ben Sira, or Shakespeare for that matter. Right? This might not be good, wise stuff about families and the life, you know, struggle of humanity, but it's not Tanakh.
The rabbis are the ones deciding if it should be canonized or not, correct?
Right. they put up certain criteria. It has to be prophetic, it has to be referred to a certain time frame, it can't be contradictory, it can't contradict other books of the Bible that were already accepted. There were five books that were questioned like this, until pretty late. Yechezkel, Mishlei, Shirashir, Koheles, and Esther. Esther is our topic for this Sunday course. By the time, you know, the Gemara wanted to like cement the idea, it's in the bag. Esther is not only canonical, it's hinted at in the Torah. You know where the end is? Have you heard? So at the end of the Torah, there are psukim that say, if you turn against me, worship Avodah Zarah, and act immorally, I will kick you out of your land. But I will always bring you back because I love you. You're my people, and I will never despise you forever. I will always bring you back. But be careful, because if you turn away from me and you act immorally, I will hide my face from you on that day. How do you say to hide my face? Anochi Aster Astir Panai Mikem Bayom Mahu. I will hide my face from you. Now you see the hint of Esther?
Yes.
Okay, it's not just that it's the same word, it looks like Esther on the board, but what does it mean? How does it manifest itself in the Purim story? So if you hear these Navi's answer, yes?
That he...
God's name does not appear in the story. Which is, by the way, one of the reasons why the Rebbe Gemara gives why they wanted to go naze it and not canonize it in the first place. You get it?
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons, what makes this story holy? It's God's name isn't even in the book. By the way, by that criteria, Shir HaShirim doesn't belong either. Because God's name isn't in Shir HaShirim either. Okay? Could you give me a reason why you think God's name isn't in Megillat Esther? Because you could say as a fulfillment of this prophecy. There'll be a story where you won't see me. Right? You ever hear of a Gemara Masechah Shabbos that says that Jews are not bound to the Torah because of what they said at Har Sinai, because they were coerced either by a mountain held over their heads or more likely in Pshat by the miracles they had seen. They were not able to make a measured judgment of accepting God's Torah. Of course they would accept God's Torah after all he just did for them. So they said, Nasa ben Ishma, without thinking what's in it. Marn Shabbos, Marn Avodah Zarah, that God offered the Torah to other nations. They will ask, what's in it first? And then they refused when they didn't like what was in it. We just asked how much it costs. So why didn't you say what's in it first? Don't you want to know what you're getting into? No, we were so emotionally connected to God because of all he had just done for us. We didn't intellectually work out what's going on. So the first sign of a problem, like the Moshe being God, they made it there, you know, easy come, easy go. Right? Rashi talks about that at the end of Parshas Hazin. Dorloi Mutbo. They have no Emuna. They just, oh yeah, okay, I'll take this. Yeah, okay, I'll take it. Give me two of them. And so, but it's in the Purim story. You hear that Kimu v'Kiblu? You ever hear of that, Lashon? The Purim story, they accepted what they were coerced into accepting at Sinai. Because at Sinai, there were everything, lights and sirens and all the miracles and the 10 plagues and the splitting of the sea. But in the Purim story, God was not there openly. And they accepted what they were sort of coerced to accept. This appears in Bechor Shor, this cheshbon of what the Torah means by Kof Aleihem Har Kegigis, that God held the mountain over their heads, threatening them that they would die right there if they didn't accept the Torah. Tosfos asks, they said, Nasa ben Ishma, what coercion was necessary? That was it. The coercion was that made them say Nasa ben Ishma, that they didn't give a measured, thoughtful response to what was going on. So Megillah Daf Zayin says that the rabbis wanted to kick Esther out of the canon of Tanakh because it doesn't appear, God's name does not appear. Right? It doesn't appear to be any moral message. They fasted, okay, but there's no prophecy. Right? What's in this book? Right? So to answer that question, I'm going to just leave you with the introduction to our next class, which is, I'm going to suggest a very different meaning of what the Gemara said than this Aster Aster Panangiken is a hint to our story. What it really means is that the main message of what this book is about is hidden to us. You will have to learn those other books down here. All of them. All the chapters. You can go over them. In order to fully appreciate what is the message of Megillat Esther. Anochi Aster Aster Panai, it's obvious. God's name isn't found in the book. Okay, why not? Ibn Ezra explains that the story was publicized not by the Jews. Who publicized the story? The Partamim, the Persians. We didn't have the wherewithal to get this story out throughout the kingdom. The Persians sent it out. That's what it says at the end of the Megillah. So we had to make it look like Ahasuerus is the big hero. He's making it look more wonderful. And, right? So it's like Dibrei Shalom Be'emes. The truth, the Jews will know that God's behind every part of the book. Shalom is for the Persians to feel that, oh, look how nice our king looks in this story. Let's send it out to all the people. So we had to leave God out of it in order to get the story out there. That's Ibn Ezra's explanation for why God's name doesn't appear. Right? The chiddush I'd like to give you in the beginning of next class is that the nature of the book is hidden. Okay? Okay? We will start next class with answering the question. Put it down there and we'll continue with it. Bring your notebook. Is how is the purpose of the book hidden, and how can we reveal it? How can we uncover the basic message of the book? Okay, we'll start with that next time. Okay, I'm going to write on the board here where you should send this, please, each time. Okay, today was our first lecture, January 29th. Okay.